This is Olive, and I'm 11 years old, and I live in Southside.
This is Cooper, and I'm 4 years old.
This is Elena. I'm 13 years old and live in Spickley.
This is Julian. I'm 14 years old and live in Highland Park. And this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
Hey there, Kidsburg Podcast listeners. We are so glad that you're with us today. We love bringing inspiring interviews, details on super cool places you might not know about, and honest answers to the questions we ask teens from the Pittsburgh area to all of you who are listening as you drive your cars or make dinner or just hang out with us. I'm Melissa Rayworth, the editor at Kidsburg.org, and I am here with two wonderful people that I have the fun of working with at Kidsburg.
Thanks, Melissa. I'm Christine Sorensen, a KDKA-TV anchor and Kidsburg producer, and I can't wait to share our interview with Ryan Rudzeski, who's the co-author of a book that's bringing Fred Rogers' wisdom to a whole new generation of parents and teachers.
And I'm Kidsburg's director, Yuling Chang, and I'm glad to be joining you two for this episode. So let's dive in. We kick off every episode with a Pittsburgh gem, a fascinating but not necessarily well-known place that Pittsburgh area families love. Today, we'll hear about Seesaw Center, a place where babies and their parents can play and relax together. Christine, tell us more.
I loved taking my three kids there when they were little, and I think it solved a couple problems. One, I felt isolated a lot of times. You know, at home, I love playing with the kids, but it's kind of isolating when you're alone playing with your children. And so this is a play space that's open to families. You can pay a membership or by the day, and you just go in, and it's in the basement of a church in Castle Shannon, and you can play. The kids can play. The adults can play. You can bring toddlers, infants. It's geared toward about kindergarten and younger. But it also is great because they have those big toys that you can't really get in your house, or you don't feel like getting the whole house dirty or messy and having to clean up. You go, they'll clean up the mess, and you have fun. So imagine things like big play castles, push cars you can move, climbing structures, those boxes filled with rice that, you know, spin on wheels and trucks, and lots of room for creative play. And sometimes the kids will play together. You can connect with other families. It's just a really wonderful special place.
I love places like Seesaw. I mean, just as you said, you can't have all of those things in your own house. But there's also a social benefit for your own kids to be able to play with other kids and to be able to interact with them. And also, as you said, for parents to meet other parents and just say, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. Mm. And to know, if, especially like you said, if you've got an infant, a young baby, or a toddler, to know that you're going to a place that's been planned for them, that is safe, that is clean, that you can let your baby crawl around and you're not going to wonder if, oh, wait, was this is meant for bigger kids. Is this a good idea? It sounds wonderful.
It really is. And you can learn all about the Seesaw Center in Kidsburg.org's guide to indoor play spaces. It's great, especially if you're a parent or caregiver who's ready to get out of the house. And you can find a link to the Seesaw Center's website as well at kidsburg.org/podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg. You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Parents, you will learn so much from our next interview, a conversation with the co-author of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. Writer Ryan Rudzeski is a former teacher and now the parent of young kids, and he's someone who has researched and thought deeply about the child development ideas behind Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and what these ideas can tell us about how we can meet the most important needs of today's kids. Let's listen. Ryan, thank you so much for being here with us. So tell us just a bit about your book and what inspired you and your co-author, Greg Baer, to write it.
Yeah, sure. So When You Wonder, You're Learning is our book about how Fred Rogers had the effect on so many millions of kids that he had. As we came to learn, as we researched the book, the neighborhood was no accident. Everything Fred did, whether it was the wardrobe he was wearing or the words he was speaking or the songs he was singing, all of that was grounded in science. And what we realized as we were researching the science that Fred was studying himself and the science that he was blending with, you know, art and puppets and songs in the neighborhood, so much of that science is exactly what today's top scientists and learning experts and teachers and parents now agree is the most important thing for kids to have. Fred Rogers taught all sorts of skills like communication and collaboration and curiosity. And we know now how much that stuff matters. It matters even more now in many ways than it did when Fred was on the air. And so what we've hoped to do with this book is make the methods behind the neighborhood both accessible and fun to read about, and also to give lots and lots of examples of how folks are doing Fred-like things in the world, whether it's folks like Bill Strickland at the Manchester Craftsman's Guild and thinking really interestingly about how environment drives behavior, or how people like the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh are encouraging kids to wonder and play. There's so much we can continue to learn from Fred Rogers and from the many people who helped Fred make the neighborhood, many of whom are still doing amazing things in Pittsburgh and beyond today.
And how lucky that we're recording right here in the basement of the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Where... Absolutely. One of my favorite places in the world. And now as a new dad, I get to experience it through my son's eyes. And what's amazing is that Fred himself was involved in a lot of the exhibits that are here or that are now traveling around the country. So even today, we think about Fred's work and why it still matters. We're still experiencing it, even if we're not watching the neighborhood on television.
And you had worked as a classroom teacher earlier in your career and were familiar with Fred Rogers' work even then. So you kind of had some grounding in the subject you were writing about. But what surprised you most once you really delved into the research for the book?
Yeah, I think as a teacher, as a classroom teacher, I don't know if my experience is representative of most teachers. I think it's probably safe to say that it is. When you're a practicing classroom teacher, you don't get a ton of exposure to what we're learning about learning itself. Occasionally, you'll read about an interesting study if it's interesting enough to make the news. If you're fortunate enough to go to a really good teacher prep program, you'll hear about the latest findings, but the latest findings change. And so it's really easy when you are working in a classroom to become sort of disconnected from what we're learning about learning and the conditions that are most conducive to learning. And what I love about Fred is when I realized that the methods he was employing still are so applicable and still matter so much, actually, we can look at Mr. Rogers as a sort of guide. If you're an educator, you can look to Fred for ways to improve your classroom practice. If you're a parent, you can look to Fred for ways to improve your parenting. The neighborhood is more than a nice memory, or at least it can be in the minds of us adults. It is very much a resource. It's a blueprint that we can look to and continue to learn from today. And that made me see Mr. Rogers in a whole new light.
Wow. And I'm sure that's amazing for the parents who grew up watching and now they realize as they read your book how much his thinking and his approach can help them. Now, there is so much valuable advice for parents in the book. And one of the things that struck me when I first read it was in the chapter about creativity, you talk about how often kids stop engaging in many kinds of creative play like drawing and doodling and making up stories, things like that, once they reach maybe fourth or fifth grade or so. Tell us a little bit about what Fred Rogers' work and your research can help us understand about that if parents and kids kind of don't want that to happen.
Yeah, there's a sort of a notorious term for that. It's called the fourth grade slump. And, you know, I was a fourth grade teacher. I saw it happen. It probably happened to me as a young kid myself. What scientists have found is that generally over time, kids start to ask fewer questions. They stop indulging their curiosity in ways that they did when they were much younger. I mean, almost all kids are born inherently curious about the world around them. The world is a big, beautiful, messy, dirty, dangerous place, and they want to know how it all works, right? But we know from modern learning science that unless we continue to encourage and nurture that sense of wonder, unless we continue to make space for the questions that kids naturally bring to us, eventually they sort of take a hint that maybe my questions aren't welcome here. And that's why, you know, if you pick almost any scene from almost 900 episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you'll see Fred asking questions. And it's almost show and tell. He wants to show us things that make him curious. And he tells us about how much he wants to know about the world. He's always modeling that curiosity and letting us know that in the neighborhood, at least, wonder has value, that questions are encouraged. And modern learning scientists, when they go out into not just classrooms, but almost any space of learning, they see that the older kids get, the less space there is for that sort of wondering and learning. And so, you know, kids get used to not asking questions. And the fewer questions they ask today, the fewer questions they're going to ask tomorrow. And that's sort of how we see that downward trajectory of wonder and curiosity. But what learning scientists have also found is doesn't have to happen that way. It's not a predetermined thing. If we can continue to give ourselves space, if we can continue to give kids permission to wonder and ask, and to give ourselves permission as adults to do so too, we can keep that spirit, that sense of wonder alive. And, you know, there are plenty of adults who manage to do that. And Fred Rogers is just one of the many, I think, visible examples that we try to outline in the book.
I loved growing up watching Mr. Rogers, and I loved your book, seeing it from the parents' perspective. And I know you've traveled around talking to so many parents. What kind of questions are parents asking you as they grapple with this unbelievable, amazing, but difficult job of being a parent?
Yeah, I mean, the questions that we hear, they really span the whole spectrum. People are always worried about screen time. They're worried about social media for good reason. There's lots of valid questions about what that does to and for kids. They're worried about how do we help kids grapple with the reality that the world isn't always a beautiful place and that there's very real pain out there that often touches children themselves and their families. They're worried about, in many ways, the same things that parents have always been worried about. But now we have all this new stuff we have to worry about, too. It's a really difficult time. And so again and again, we go back to this moment, actually it's the 1940s, I think, when Fred Rogers, who was a young man himself at the time, walked into his parents' living room in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and saw this strange glowing box. His family was the first family in Latrobe to have a television set. And Fred turned it on, curious, and the first thing he saw was people throwing pies in each other's faces. And he hated it. Fred Rogers, icon of American television, hated television because he said he didn't like to see a new technology being used to demean other people. Now, we have all sorts of new and exciting technological ways to demean each other now. But Fred, you know, he sort of ran into the fire. He realized that this technology was not going anywhere, as our new technology is not going anywhere. And so he realized that his job, the job of caring adults, is to find ways to make that technology good and attractive and beneficial for kids. And it was not easy work, as we learned, but he managed to do it. And even today, we owe him a debt of gratitude for that. And there are so many people following in his footsteps, doing the same with other new technologies, paving a path for, you know, a healthy, positive digital experience.
I think so many parents are always wondering, or they may not realize actually, how much the ways that they're living their lives, just by example, can kind of help their kids. So as a parent of a toddler, what are some of your favorite pieces of advice in the book when you think about, you know, just how you would put all this kind of stuff into practice?
It's a really good question. And, you know, I find myself struggling with it in ways that have surprised me. Just to give you an example, there's an alley behind my house. And in this alley, my son, who's 2 years old, we have a plastic car that he can ride in or he can push. And he likes to push it. And he pushes it back and forth down this alley. And we might do this 20 or 30 times in an evening. And sometimes he'll stop. I can tell he's looking at something. And I'll find myself saying, come on, you know, let's keep going. And I have to ask myself, like, why am I doing that? We have no destination in mind. We have no place that we need to be. Why am I hurrying him along and sort of pulling him out of this state of wonder that he's clearly in, instead of trying to figure out, well, what are you looking at? You know, what's catching your attention? What are you wondering about? And so I think as a dad, I'm trying to break a lot of habits that I've developed over the years. And it took a 2-year-old who has none of those habits to show me what those habits were. And so just like, you know, Fred himself, I'm trying to be slower and more patient. And I'm trying to see the world more through my son's eyes rather than, you know, through my own hurried sense of self. And I'm trying to be more intentional about the environments that I create for him and thinking very seriously about how often do I have music on in the house? Can I have more music on? You know, can we have more art on the walls, more colors, more stories? How can I make my house more like my own version of a Mr. Rogers neighborhood in 2024?
And now you've got a second child coming. So are there things you've learned about parenting now, you know, with your first that will inform your second, especially in light of everything you've learned with the research from Mr. Rogers?
What's really encouraging is that so many people, as we've continued to talk about the book over the past few months, and now I always have to tell people like, hey, look, I'm checking my phone during this. I wouldn't normally do that, but this baby could come any day now. And when I tell people that, it's kind of remarkable how many people have told me when I had my second or when my baby brother or sister was born, you know, the person who helped me was Mr. Rogers. Or when my second kid was born, what really helped was an episode of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood specifically, in which they talk about how hard that can be. So it's interesting that the work that has consumed so much of my life over the past few years is also turning out to be the resource that's most helpful during a time of exciting change.
So what would you want kids to know about the ideas in your book? One of the things we love about our podcast is that a lot of our listeners are parents who listen with their kids. And so if there are kids riding along in the car who probably know Daniel Tiger but may or may not have seen the original Mr. Rogers Neighborhood series, just what kinds of things would you want them to have in mind?
What would have helped me when I was a kid the most was reassurance that if you think the question you really want to ask is stupid, just ask it anyway. Because if it's a question for you, I guarantee the other people around you are probably wondering about the same thing. And a lot of people are probably too scared to bring it up. And when you become the person to bring it up, everybody is relieved, everybody is grateful, and everybody benefits. So I would encourage the kids who are listening to ask that question. No matter how worried you are or if you're worried about looking not smart, be brave enough to ask that question, and you'll be surprised what you get out of it and what your neighbors get out of it too.
Thank you for being here with us, because I think it's so fascinating for parents to realize and for kids to realize that Fred Rogers is still teaching us stuff every day.
Thank you for having me. And I'll just say, you know, having spoken to parents and teachers all across the country for the past few years, it has really driven home for me how lucky we are to have something like Kidsburg in Pittsburgh. There aren't many places where there's a resource like that for parents. So thanks to both of you for the work you're doing. It's so important. And, you know, personally, I benefit from it now, too.
Thank you.
I loved this interview with Ryan. And first, since recording this, we have to share some great news. Congratulations to Ryan and his wife, Jackie. Their baby, Virginia Jean, was born right after they recorded this. So,
that's so exciting.
That's fantastic.
You know, what I loved about this interview is Ryan had all this great advice about parenting and studied the science behind Fred Rogers. But I love that he acknowledged that parenting is hard, mm-hmm. that even he struggles with it, and that it's hard to, like, tell your hurried self, right? Like, I'm constantly on my phone, scheduling the next thing, texting somebody back, to just put that down and enjoy the little walks that you have, to not hurry your child along, and to let them wonder and sit there and wonder with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he told that story about walking in the alley behind his house, you can imagine that. I think we all want so much to teach, trying each day to teach our kids as much as possible. So I could totally imagine being the parent who's like, okay, so I'm teaching my child how to push this little bike down the street and I'm helping him learn to do this. So I would totally keep moving my kid along to keep doing that. And there's so much wisdom in Ryan stopping and thinking, wait a second, I'm going to let my son guide me, because there's so much firing off in his little brain and it's worth giving plenty of space to that.
And I loved how he said, don't be afraid to ask questions. My kids are all teenagers now, and I can see that starting to become a fear, and just really needing to encourage that, because it just opens so many doors.
Yeah. It's a good reminder to all of us, right? Even as adults, to continue asking questions.
Well, it's true. And I think in some ways, traditionally, I think parents thought, we have to seem like we know everything, and we have to show our kids that, don't worry, like, we're in charge and we've got it all figured out. But there's so much benefit in us asking questions in front of them and saying, I don't know if I completely understand this, or I don't think I ever knew why this works this way. And I'd love to know. When they can see us doing that, I think that gives them real permission to do it themselves.
So important to continue flexing that curiosity muscle. You can find a link to When You Wonder You're Learning at kidsburg.org/podcast. And in a moment, you'll hear local teens share the honest advice they'd love to give parents and caregivers about how they can help kids do better in school.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
We asked students at SLB Radio's Youth Media Center for their advice to parents and other caregivers about how they can help kids do better in school. Here's what they said.
Advice I would give for helping students in school is probably making sure they, like, have all of the materials they need, so, like, you are able to give them a good learning experience with all the stuff they need.
I think that something that adults can do to help kids is to listen genuinely. Because I feel like a lot of times adults want to tell kids how to do things, and sometimes it just doesn't fit. So just being patient and listening to what the kid has to say, and not putting your own experiences or like what's helped you, but it's not going to help that kid. So definitely sitting there listening and try to give them more like personalized advice instead of just like saying what worked for you and then just leave it there. And it doesn't work for them, you're just like, oh well, like too bad, that's what worked for me.
Not every kid is awarded the luxury of having like adults in their lives steering them in the right direction and giving them good advice and looking out for them and making sure they're on track and going in a positive direction. And so whenever you catch yourself thinking like, well, who's teaching you things? Like, assume nobody. And then ask yourself, well, what could you do to change that in your community? What outreach are you doing to help other kids in your area? Maybe you had a great mentor when you were growing up that really made a difference in you, and you want to be that person for somebody else.
From the Youth Media Center at SLB Radio, this is Megan.
Hello, this is Sophia.
This is Angelina. Thanks for listening.
So much to think about in this episode. I loved hearing from the teens and from Ryan, and we've got plenty more inspiration and ideas coming in the next Kidsburg podcast episode.
Yeah, we've got 6 podcast episodes this fall, and if you missed any from our spring session, we've got 6 there that you can listen to as well.
Just go to kidsburg.org/podcast to find them all, and be sure to sign up for our free weekly Kidsburg newsletter to find the news stories and online guides that can help you raise the kids you love in the Pittsburgh region and beyond. Thanks for joining us for this Kidsburg podcast.
This is Rocco. I'm in 7th grade and homeschooled, and this is the Kidsburg podcast.
On the next Kidsburg podcast, we talk with tech entrepreneur Ray Abel about changing the lives of folks with disabilities. Plus, we take you to the gorgeous Beechwood Farms Nature Reserve.
And we spill the tea with teens, asking them for their honest take on what would actually make their daily lives easier. Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org to learn about the resources and the great advice from local experts that can help every family find the best opportunity to thrive.